Part 31, Chapter 2. They burst out of the forest and rushed toward the palace, and then Windsplitter made a huge show of how hard it was to stop. It wasn't, and reared and pawed the air.
Show off?
Johnny accused him. It hadn't been all that much of a run, only half a mile, but Windsplitter was content. The row that was going on in the middle of the 10-acre lawn attracted him. Stormy, the lame Blodgett's colt, he looked just like Windsplitter, even with his much too long legs, and a huge tan dog that had recently trotted out of the forest and adopted Chrissy were romping and plunging and racing away and pretending to stomp and bite, always missing. Blodgett was looking on without much concern, and Windsplitter walked over to her. Johnny slid off and raised his hand to the Russian in the control turret hidden in the right-hand tower. A flick of a white sleeve as the guard waved back. This place had really changed. The only trouble with it was, it looked too new and shiny, and it certainly now would never age. The Chinese engineers had understood, but the Chatavarians just couldn't grasp that a place should show a little age. Johnny remembered when Chrissy had first spotted the place. They were in a small plane, and Johnny, having just bought the duchy, was trying to get some idea of its layout. Chrissy had all of a sudden leaned out the window and shouted,
"There! There! There!"
And nothing would do but that he land and let her look at the place. She had still been gaunt, and he couldn't refuse her much. The building had stood in the middle of a wilderness that might have once been parks. Hard to tell. Hard to tell even that the piled ruin of stone had ever been much but rocks. Chrissy had raced around, heedless of the briars that plucked at her buckskin leggings, shouting back at him in wild excitement. She pointed to a 50-acre plot, crying,
"And that's just the place for a cattle yard!"
And to another place,
"Ideal for your horses!"
And spreading her arms, indicating some pits. And then tracing a stream that was bubbling along, minding its own business.
"And this can be diverted to run right by the kitchen door, and we can have running water all the time."
She had gone tearing around on the cracked remains of what might have been room floors and pointed to outlines Johnny could not see.
"A fireplace here, and one here, and another there."
Then she had stood in front of him and said,
"Here we will never be hungry. We will never be snowed in. We will never be cold."
And then, defiantly, as though he might say no,
"This is where we are going to live."
Johnny got the Chatavarian chief engineer, who had arrived with the 200 Chatavarian first construction contingent, and told him to build something modern on the site. He thought he was rid of the problem, but the following day he found himself confronted by a very irate Chatavarian architectural team. When a Chatavarian became incensed, he sort of whistled through his teeth, quite distinct from the gurgling sound, like air coming up through a water bottle, when they laughed. The leading architect was whistling his indignation. It didn't matter whether Johnny owned the company, but Johnny was really a Chatavarian, proven by the fact that he had his title direct from the Empress Bees, and he had to be told that he should know better. Completely at sea, Johnny was treated to a dissertation on architecture. They had studied earth forms, and many were all right. Classic Greek and Roman were known in other systems and, if impractical, were still acceptable. Gothic, neo-Gothic, and Renaissance architecture they actually thought quite novel. They could even strain their artistic sensibilities by going along with Baroque. But modern? They quit. Send them back to Chatavaria. Send them back even though they would starve there. Some things one just couldn't do